Welcome to Sidetracked, your unofficial agency of record. I'm Shane.
And I'm Emily, and we help run Trek, a tech-driven, full-service creative agency based in Rockford, Illinois.
Here on the podcast, we tackle our clients' biggest marketing challenges. We reveal what's worked for us and dig into real-life case studies and practical strategies you can put to work today.
Curiosity is our compass, which is why we always start with a question. Today's big question, is direct mail worth it? And here to help us answer this question is our graphic designer, Aurelia Tauscher, here for the first time.
Hello.
Hi, Aurelia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Welcome.
So we always start with a question to loosen up a little, something fun. I think when I'm thinking about direct mail, is it worth it from a marketer standpoint? I always like to put my consumer hat on. And I'm just curious for either of you, do you get exciting mail still?
I would say no. I don't get exciting mail. It's been a while since I've been excited to like receive mail, I think.
Tell us more about that.
Well, I don't subscribe to anything. So if I did subscribe to more things, I think I would be more excited to receive mail. But normally I get the, you know, NICOR bills, the, you know, bills aren't fun. Other than that, it's normally, ads that local ads and things that I get. There's one that I do get pretty frequently. And it's always like, we can pay off your car. And those are probably the most memorable just because I find myself, they always look handwritten and I always find myself kind of like, yeah, like trying to figure out if somebody actually spent the time to write this or if this is something that somebody printed or wrote once, printed, sent it over to me.
Right. But that's not an exciting experience. It's almost like a little bit of suspense. Like, yeah. What is this? Am I in trouble or are they actually helpful or is it spam?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Shane, do you get good mail that excites you anymore?
I get great mail. So
lucky.
I don't know. I guess we're being targeted for very different things. So the most premium pieces of mail I've received recently are offers for credit cards. And I have yet to opt into one of these offers. Actually, that might be a lie. I might have done one at some point, but they're always asking me to upgrade. And I love the like premium envelopes that they send these days. It's like hopped into this fancy credit card and you have this like nice texture on the envelope and
so
I don't know.
Do you mean by premium envelope, premium mail? Like what does that mean to you?
That's such a great question. The paper is thicker. They went for the nice paper. There's maybe some sort of special coating on it or some sort of finishing or there's a foil. Like you can tell that time and investment went into the piece. I also get, you know, a ton of spam mail as well. But I'm much more likely to open it if it's a nice piece of mail. My favorite piece of mail that I received recently, I actually saved it and I keep it on my desk. Hang on, I'll get it. Okay. So you might know that we had, a mayoral primary here in New York. And so we were getting tons of political mail. It was like every day, like multiple mailers a day during primary season. It was actually kind of insane.
Were they good? Were most of them good? Or was this a standout because
No.
It was a good one? Okay.
That's a good question. So this one stood out because it was a really good one. And I came to think of each campaign over the course of the, you know, many weeks. It was like the last month of the campaign that all this mail was coming. I sort of like categorized them like, okay, this campaign doesn't have great direct mail. This one does. This one, some of the mail was coming from like super PACs and, you know, outside groups that were trying to influence people. So I was also judging their mail. But this is the best piece I got. And so this was from the person who ended up winning the primary. And it on the start of it, you can see he's on the subway platform. And then it's like this rolling fold that inside you've got the subway platform, and each new fold you're unfolding his platform. Get it? The campaign platform on the subway platform. And what I love about this, and you've got all like the details of like the New York City subway maps. So like design wise, I just think this is like beautiful. So at the bottom, it says platform, and it's, you know, using like the subway tile and the subway like typography. It's just so iconic that immediately I'm like, a good designer was involved in this piece for sure. And then, you know, on the front, like all the content goes along with the theme. So like moving working people forward, it's this idea of like forward momentum, and we're on the train, like we're going somewhere. So I loved the way that the content played with the design. The paper is also like really, you know, thick, and it's a nice paper. Like they didn't cheap out on the paper. And the thing a lot of times when you get a piece of good mail, that what it says to me is the team that was involved in this worked together well, because we know from creating direct mail, it actually takes a lot of collaboration to make a nice piece of print. You have to have a copywriter who knows what they're doing. You need a designer, multiple designers who know what they're doing. You need a printer who knows what they're doing. And all of those people have to be able to work together without anyone sort of like overstepping their role in the piece. Because a lot of times I think what you see with some of the direct mail that I get, I think like, ooh, this could have been good, but somebody stepped in who was not a designer and had like a bunch of stuff to add. And then you can tell that it got like too crowded, or like there, you know, the copy doesn't work anymore. Like you can tell when something went wrong during the design process with a piece of print. And with this, I was just like, oh, it says so much more to me about the people behind the scenes on that campaign than, you know, some of the other mailers that won't be named during that primary season.
Yeah. And I love that even piece. If you didn't know all of this about direct mail, like if you were just an average consumer, I think the message still comes across, because you're still getting all the other mail that feels chaotic or overdone. And maybe they just wouldn't know that, like, oh, this feels this way because it wasn't a good team effort, or because of the reasons that you just mentioned. Like, you know why the mail looks the way it does. But like, that doesn't mean that like somebody who doesn't know all those things can't feel that or experience that chaos, disunity in messaging and that kind of thing as well.
Even if you can't describe exactly why a piece of mail is working or isn't working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What I love about that is like, it is thoughtful. Like you can tell, yeah, they sat down and they thought about this, and it took time to put together. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like a lot of direct mail that I receive is just somebody like quickly writing something up, sending it out just because they need to get something out the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to tell you something. So I'm going to tell you that in the way that I want to tell you, because it's easiest for me to tell you in a jumbo postcard or a, you know, mailer that insert, you know, ads or whatever. I think that I also don't get a lot of exciting mail. I'm probably more like you, Aurelia, and like I get the really boring kind of mail most of the time. However, my husband went to Georgetown, and so we get Georgetown mail, which is always good. Like, it doesn't matter if it's the Alumni Association, if it is like school updates or anything, it's always, they have a good brand, I'll say, you know, and it's always good paper. The navy coloring with the gray is always consistent because that's something I look for too. I'm like, they're not printing all of these things the same place. Like, is this the same color? And it is. It's always the same navy. It's always the same gray. It doesn't look like I get a piece of mail and things look a little weird. But I think the biggest thing for me in getting their mail is that it's always different sizes. So they send probably something every quarter. It's more in the fall when it's like their big fundraising season for the Alumni Association, but, there's always different sizes. So like sometimes it's like a tiny postcard. Other times it's a self mailer, like what you showed us, Shane. Other times it's a mailer in like a poly envelope and it has like a little like notepad sticky that says like Georgetown at the top or something. They're like giving you something. But every time I see it come through in my informed delivery, USPS, you know, email that tells me what's in my inbox, I'm always interested like, oh, I see they did a different size this time. Or, you know, this is a something they haven't done in a while. You know, this is just a normal letter. Is this more important? Cause it's just a normal letter and not a postcard. What are they saying in this letter? I wonder, you know, like it's interesting how the form factor changing also matches the message and like those things that we don't think about, like until I just said it now, I wouldn't have realized, or like what you were saying, Aurelia, I got a letter in just a plain envelope and like what that communicates about what the message is, which is like much more buttoned up and kind of like serious or news or like, yeah, something that is maybe not as exciting. But like if I was to get a mailer that was really splashy and lots of faces and that kind of thing, it's like usually more of like an invitation to something.
It's funny that you bring up college or, you know, because you're inspiring me to maybe I should subscribe more or like join my alumni association. Because my husband went to SIU and he gets a lot of that kind of mail, and he is also a pilot. So he also gets a lot of pilot magazines in the mail. And so those I find myself flipping through, but I also get bored a lot of times seeing them come in so reoccurringly. But I don't know, maybe I should reach out, because I do love getting mail. It's fun. I love sending out Christmas cards.
Do you get catalogs?
Once in a while, and it's funny, I don't know how they get my address, but you know, if I buy something online, which that I guess is probably why. But even I've gotten some smaller postcards from like clothing brands that I have maybe just email subscribed to. And sometimes I will, but if I find myself not purchasing something, then the mail stops coming. So they maybe figure out, oh, this person has not purchased anything from us in a while. We can remove them from our mailing list.
Are you signed up for USPS informed delivery?
I am not. I should be.
So Emily mentioned it. For those who don't know, you can sign up and USPS will email you in the morning every day and tell you what's coming in the mail for you that day. And it's so fun. It's just like a nice little like preview. Like, oh, what am I going to get? And then when you see
a literal
something
preview.
Exciting, yeah. A literal preview.
It's like pictures a picture. Of your mail. Yeah, it's a picture of the mail that's going to be in your inbox. And as a sender of mail, you can choose to have like a ride along button that, like, if I'm sending a credit card application to Shane, I could choose to say, I want to send a link to that application in that USPS mail as well, so that she has two ways to convert, which is in that USPS mail telling her it's there, or when she actually gets the physical mailer. And then when you do that, the piece of the picture that they have is colored. So it's a color image versus if you don't pay anything, it's just a black and white image of the mail that's coming. But
now that you say that, I think Chris, who, you know, is another one of our designers here, I think he is, and like his computer is kind of right across from me. So once in a while he'll pull it up and be like, oh, I'm getting this in the mail today.
Nice little surprise.
I should do
it
that.
It is. It's free to sign up too.
Free. It's great. Yeah. Why not?
And then if you're sending direct mail, you can ask your printer and who's sending them all out, and they can give you the data from like, okay, how many people clicked on that or how many people opened the emails to see, I think, like mm-hmm. engaged people. You can get different data that way. So anyways, we're answering the question, is it worth it? These are some of the ways that, you know, can help get more value out of mail. But I think the overlying or underlying idea that we're all saying is that there's lots of opportunity for mail because no one person that we talk to really ever gets good mail consistently. And I think maybe that comes from this understanding from a marketer's perspective of when direct mail is appropriate and like when to consider it as a channel to use in your marketing mix. So what are the times that we would suggest a client introduce direct mail into their marketing campaigns? Aurelia, you want to start?
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is just, especially if you have like a new product coming out or if you want more engagement on something, how can we create more engagement? I think the best way is to send something directly to somebody's house because you know it's going to get there. You know they're probably going to pick up their mail. So they have like a first impression of what that is and, you know, can direct them to a website or that product specifically, I think is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Product launch. Mm-hmm. I'd say also if you have like a high value list. So if you have like a target list and you really want to target these, if you're B2B, these companies, or if you're B2C, if you have a list of, you know, this is the ideal customer profile for us, then it's worth the investment. I wouldn't just send it out to, if you have a list of, you know, 50,000 people and you're not sure if any of them are actually going to be interested in your product because it costs money to send mail. It costs a lot more than sending an email. So when you know you have a high value list, that's when to do it.
Yeah, there's two warring thoughts in my mind on like when to send it because you want to be able to prove ROI as best as you can, like any marketing effort. And so tying it to a very specific call to action, buy this product, you know, like you're saying, Aurelia, or like you're saying, Shane, like the quality of the people will get you the results for that investment. But I also think that there's something to be said about the awareness, journey. And you mentioned earlier, Aurelia, you know, they send you a mail, you don't make a purchase, you never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a shame because so much of the awareness journey we're bombarded with online that staying top of mind to me can't just happen digitally anymore. Like, okay, maybe I'm not ready to make a purchase right now, but if it's like a bigger purchase, then maybe I need to hear from you a couple of times over the course of a few months, in print as well as digital. I know mm-hmm. for me, I just kind of like filter out all the noise to focus on the things that I really need to focus on. And mail interrupts that. It like forces that.
Yeah.
Like facing of something.
Yeah. I agree. And
so like, awareness to me is like a big opportunity for mail where like they're not ready to buy. Like you should still give them the opportunity to buy or make that final action in the mail. Yes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that you should only ever use it for that. Like keep coming back to this funnel, but like do the thing I want you to do at the bottom of the funnel. That's not the only time that, you should use mail because it's a good way to stay in front of people. That's what I'm saying.
I am not somebody who is on my phone constantly. And when I get, you know, all these email ads about buying, you know, clothes or like we got a sale coming out or something like that, I'm less likely to really open that email than I am to go through physical mail that gets delivered to my door. Cause I do like looking through, you know, and maybe I only spend 5 minutes doing it, but it's still something that I like to physically touch, and like I know that I'm going to look through this if it gets delivered at my door.
Mm-hmm. I will always flip through every page of a catalog.
Yeah. Every time.
Yeah.
It's because even if I know I don't want to buy anything right now, like it's still, it's a wind down thing.
I flip through my husband's pilot magazines. I don't fly.
And I often do, if there's a promo code or if there's a QR code, I will often jump over to the website to check something out.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they're like, I can think of, there are a few furniture brands like Design Within Reach will send their catalog and they'll be having a Labor Day sale or Memorial Day sale. And I'm like, what's on sale? I'm maybe not going to buy a chair right now, but I want to check it out. And then eventually when the time comes to buy a chair, sure. That's the first place I'm going to think of.
Yeah. And in the, like the B2B space, like we all have those things. Like you're saying, Shane, you know, as a consumer, I have this like things I need to buy eventually list in my mind that I'm like, if there's a sale that comes up, I'm like relatively ready to buy. And I think the same thing is true in the B2B context where there's a couple of problems that I need to solve, that I need to figure out, that I need to either find the time to, find the solution to, talk to the right people, whatever. And they're always kind of just floating there in my to-do list. And so you can approach it the same way, like help them solve that problem with communicating that in your mail, you know, in your, speak to that. What are the things that they are trying to solve?
100%. Another time when mail can be really effective is abandoned cart direct mail. So there are studies showing if you just send an abandoned cart email versus sending an abandoned cart email and an abandoned cart, say, postcard, adding the direct mail touch point lifts the conversion rates on abandoned carts. So that is when it can be really, really effective. We're also used to abandoned cart emails. Those are really easy to ignore, but an abandoned cart postcard is still kind of unusual enough and catches attention enough that it can get that person back to finish their checkout.
Mm-hmm.
You could even use that same principle for like other things on the website. Like what if they like started to request a quote and then didn't? That's, I don't know if you can get
that.
You'd have to be very intentional about how you gather that data.
There are certain pages of your website too. Like maybe there's a page of your website that is more bottom of funnel. And you know that they were on that page. Send a postcard, get them back to the website to finish what they were looking into. That it can be used that way too. It doesn't have to be used just in like a B2C cart checkout context.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about ways that it is a good channel, a good time to use it. We've also said that it does add another cost. So, sending an email is cost as much as your time to build it in whatever platform you send it. Sending a mailer, you've got design cost, print cost, mail cost. All of those are, sometimes just what they're going to be. There's nothing you can do about it. However, there are ways that people can optimize to make sure their return on investment is higher, especially with postage. Aurelia, what are some ways that people can help offset the cost of that mailing piece? Yeah.
Well, we're talking about those USPS incentives that are available. So that's, you know, if you're using a fun finishing on something, if there's a die cut included, even if you're using sustainable paper, there are discounts that get applied to that postage. So that relieves a little bit of cost from you. And those actually can not only benefit you, but benefit your designer, because that allows them to really reach out of, you know, their creative mindset and think about ways that we could make this piece, this direct mail piece, even more impressionable.
Yeah. And it's the key to really leveraging those promotional discounts is working with a designer who understands them and working mm-hmm. with a printer who understands them, because you kind of have to think about it at the beginning of the process. So you have to think about, okay, which incentives are we going to go after with this? Not all of them last all year. So some of them have specific times of the year that they apply. So you have to kind of work with people who understand these programs and can get you the best bang for your buck. And so a printer and a designer who will actually proactively recommend, hey, why don't we add a zip strip to this mailer? Because then it can qualify for the interactive discount and that's going to save you, I think it's like 3% on postage.
Yeah.
That's the key. You got to really plan ahead.
Mm-hmm. And the promotions change every year. So just because you have a plan this year, and a good partner this year who's helping you, those partners and you as a marketer have to stay on top of what next year's promotions are, because they're not copy paste every year. They're mm-hmm. fluid. They have nuanced things for like catalogs. Like you can't just send a brochure that has, you know, 24 pages and it counts. You know, it has to be showing products and have the ability to purchase a product through this catalog. And, you know, there's all kinds of nuances. But the savings can add up, especially if you're mm-hmm. sending multiple pieces, and that's another discount. You send three or more pieces in a span of time, you can get a discount for that. Mm-hmm. But
now there's an incentive just to grow the amount of mail you're sending based on the previous year. So if you can show this was our baseline and then in the next year send more mail than that, you can get a discount. And the sustainability discount that Aurelia, you mentioned, that's actually stackable. So you can do like an interactive piece that uses sustainable paper and get both discounts. These programs are really helpful, especially since postage, you know, keeps going up, and can really help marketers show better ROI.
Just going through like the US promotions, I was looking at things that you might not even think that would apply, like variable data is one of them. Another one I was, just like even adding a QR code, that kind of stuff.
Practices anyway, too. It's like you want to do those things with your mail because it makes the mail better. It makes people more likely to respond to it.
Yeah. And I was going to mention, I completely forgot, there is a direct mail piece that we do get frequently. And my husband likes to throw it up in my face, but this would apply. There's new technology for like smelling scents in you know, paper. And we get one that's from Nycor. It's a scratch and sniff and it smells like gas. So, you know.
Weird.
This like.
Yeah.
I think that I would not like that.
I'm not sure that's appealing. I mean, what's the purpose? What do they want? Is it like a safety thing? Like, this is the smell of gas. And if you smell this smell, then like do these things or what?
Right. Like, you know, this is what gas smells like. Yeah. So I would hope that most people would already know that. But I mean, it's still like, it's memorable. And Jake throws it in my face every time we get the mail just to remind me, like, I don't know.
So it's like a public service announcement, sort mm-hmm. of. And it's also getting you to interact with their mail piece and pay attention mm-hmm. to whatever other information they put in that piece. Mm-hmm. Okay. I can see it.
Yeah. I can get behind that.
Yeah. But it's, I've been working some sense into some pieces for clients, like, the smell of leather or the smell of, you know, freshly cut grass. I think those mm-hmm. are probably a little more pleasurable than gas. Yeah.
But I mean, to that point, like not only important for your clients to keep up with these promotions, but also like your designers, because you kind of reading through it, you kind of learn like what new technologies might be out there that you might not have thought of before. Like I never would have thought that you could add scent to paper or in that instance, like unless I obviously got that mail piece, but that it's a USPS promotion so that we could include that, and that would be really impactful.
We've also learned a lot of lessons along the way about not just, so like postal promotions aside, the importance of cost savings in the way you design for things like the mail panel. So like it needs to be clear. There can't be, like text in certain areas. Like the zip fold or the, what did you call it, Shane, again? I forgot.
Zip strip.
Yeah. Like things, nuances in the way that that functions can increase the cost of a mailing as well. So again, going to, back to what you're saying, really that concepting, knowing what's possible, but then also keeping in mind some of those things that will increase postal cost for almost no reason. Most of the time we can find ways to work around it where it maintains the design of, the integrity of the design and still achieve what we need to achieve, but just for a less cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of designing for mail is about value engineering.
Yeah.
Yes.
Knowing what our client's budget is and then being able to kind of create a concept that works for that piece, that's impactful, but also cost effective. And working with your printer, to know like what is possible. 'Cause we did do a piece, for someone that does include a zip strip, but it was kind of unique where it needed to be, it had a specific die that was a little curvy that worked with the concept of the piece and that we were promoting. But we had to do a little finagling on how to make that work and how that was going to work best for our printer, for the piece itself, and yeah, to be cost effective for our client.
So those are ways to help you kind of optimize, get more bang for your buck on your mail. What are some ways then that you can really make it stand out so that the action you want, the, engagement from your audience is as high as possible from a design standpoint? Why don't you start, Aurelia?
Yeah. I mean, keeping up with just design trends, I think, what's out there right now, which I mean, I kind of struggle with sometimes because design trends are just always changing. So, you know, I stay the most active on like social media just to see what other designers are doing right now. Sometimes that doesn't always like translate to specifically direct mail. But just trying to think a little, I like to try to think a little bit out of the box, like, because if I'm trying to think of like what I would like to receive if I was, you know, getting mail from this person, if what's going to be best for me, it's if I were to open this, like, what am I going to want to see? So from that kind of design perspective, just seeing what other people are doing, right now, but make it fun. I like to just make things fun.
We have some like sources of inspiration that we look to. So our friends at Paper Specs, they're often highlighting really fun pieces of mail. So you can see, you know, what are other designers doing with print, and Fold Factory. There's a website, Fold Factory. And it's this woman who just highlights all of these different really fun folds. So those are two places when I'm thinking about writing copy for a piece of mail and working with a designer on what the creative concept is going to be. I'll often go to those two websites to just get inspiration and get ideas. For the copy, I think one of the most important things is writing way, way, way less than you think you need to. So a piece of mail can fit so few words on it. You just have to be extremely direct, extremely clear, often, you know, big type, to grab attention, but you still have to get your point across and you have to make sure the person understands what the offer is. So it's a fine balance when trying to create copy for direct mail. I often find myself though, I'll give myself like word counts. Like I only have 50 words to do this. Try to say it in 50 words. Or I'll do a first draft and then say, okay, I'm going to cut the word count down by half.
I think that's important. It's when you read copy, like when we go through the process of building a direct mail for a client, you know, you read the copy in a document you're like, wait, that's all the copy? Like, we want to say so much more, you know? And then the client's like, wait, we want to say so much more, you know? And we're like, okay, we can give it a little bit more, but let's just see how it looks in layout, you know? Because then it moves over to Aurelia and she lays it out and you're like, okay, this is great. This feels good. Other times when you might not think twice and you see the content doc, you're like, yep, that says everything it needs to say. And you see it lay out and you're like, this is overwhelming. Like, no one's mm-hmm. going to know what to do with this information because there's too much content. And then it's
really easy for a mail piece to feel crowded and chaotic. And so you just really have to think about what is the most important message that this person needs to take away. If they only can read one sentence or one phrase, what does it need to be?
Yeah. I think from a design perspective, I think we appreciate that too, because we want it to stand out in terms of design a lot of times rather than like all of the copy involved. And a lot of times the design takes over a lot of, you know, like you're saying, we don't have a lot of room to work with, and we want to be able to put that design into it without being focused so much on the type itself sometimes.
It has to be visually impactful first, because then they're not even going to pick it up and read it if it's not visually impactful. Mm-hmm. But that's also why I like to do things that have more complex folds or pieces that have an augmented reality component, because then you actually have a lot more space. So versus, you know, just like a postcard or jumbo postcard that might have two sides, if I've got something the same size but it's a rolling fold, then I can actually say a little more. Or if I have a QR code that jumps off to a landing page, I can say a little bit more.
Yeah. I think for me, it starts with like, if we're sending a direct mail for a client, we've never done that before, it's the same process as any other channel where we first would say, okay, who is this going to? Who is this list? What kind of, calls to action make the most sense for this person? Like, what are they most likely to convert on or take this action on? With this form. So, it's like the same principle. It's just be what they want to consume, not interrupt what they want to consume ish. That's the exact same way we would approach anything, is who is your audience? What are their expectations, and meet them where they are? And then kind of what you're saying, Aurelia, put yourself in their shoes to say, what kind of mail are they getting? Are they getting any mail? What are your competitors doing in that space? And then from there, you know what the playing field is. So then standing out is easier, because it might not need to be dramatic. Like, maybe just sending the mail in the first place is standing out.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like it.
That's very true.
Other times it might be all your competitors are sending mail, so you have to do something that like catches some more attention. Mm-hmm. And you know how far you need to push it then from that baseline.
We haven't even talked about personalization, but Emily, you were talking about the audience and being what they want to read. Aurelia, I'm curious, what are your favorite things to personalize in a piece of direct mail when you have the chance to do so?
Well, the easiest thing is just a lot of times variable data.
I always go to like the example of if you're a vet and in your CRM, you know who's a dog owner and who's a cat owner, and you're sending out a piece of mail and it's going to have an image on the front. The dog owners get an image of a dog. The cat owners get an image of a cat. Maybe it's similar messaging, like book your pet's annual exam, or maybe the messaging is a little bit different. Book your dog's annual exam, or maybe you put the dog's name in. Book Barbara's annual exam. Because you've got that data. So putting it to good use to make sure that the person gets a mailer that feels extremely personal to them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great example. Like my dog. Or if it's specific to the breed, maybe.
Oh, yes. That. So Aurelia gets one with a, is he a dog?
Her dog.
Yeah, she? Dachshund. Yeah.
Is it she?
She? Yep, cricket. Mm-hmm. She. Yep.
She's a she. Okay. Yeah. So Aurelia gets a postcard with a picture of a dachshund that says, book Cricket's annual exam. Mm-hmm. I get one with a picture of a shih tzu that says, book Barbara's annual exam, you're only using, in that case, you're going to use the person's first name, the pet's name, and you're changing up the image. And maybe you've got like several pictures of breeds, and maybe for the breeds that you don't have a picture of, there's like a general dog image that goes in for the dog owners. Like, that's a pretty easy thing to do that makes the end recipient feel like, wow, my vet knows me. I'm calling right now to book this appointment.
Or they may not think that consciously, but it's like a cohesion thing. Like, it just feels like they may not be able to put their finger on it, but they just feel.
It feels more personal.
That sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So many cool things you can do with mail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so many cool things.
Problem solved. We had a client who wanted to send out, it was like 10,000 mail pieces. It's a pretty big list to their customers. Their customers receive a lot of mail. They have a very active competitor base. So they needed a mailer that would stand out and stay within postal restrictions in terms of the size. So we brainstormed a couple of different ways to approach it and landed on a little catalog. It's like a little mini catalog. And then it had this wraparound colored paper cover that had like that fold out. And I think there's a couple of things here that like made this campaign really successful for their audience. First was that I've never seen one of this kind of mailer, done well before. I've gotten like spam type things that look like this, that feel very cheap, but I've never seen one like this before. The second thing is that we had to communicate a lot. And so, Shane, it's kind of like what you were saying before about when you have a lot to communicate, you have to play with the form factor. That's exactly what we did in this case. So there was like the booklet inside was probably 7 pages or no, it would have been a multiple of 4. So it was like 16 pages, six spreads or seven spreads. And it then had all this really beautiful imagery paired with content, and it gave us that breathing room to tell the story in a way that didn't feel cluttered and over the top. Mm-hmm. And then the wraparound piece, so there was this mailer and then the booklet, and then it had a housing that was on the back, and the booklet itself was glued to the back of the sheet, and then the cover folded and rolled out. So you had all that space to communicate the message on the cover as well as the booklet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a really unique thing. And then to add it all cherry on top, we did like a really interesting die cut on the front of the cover so that you could see through to the booklet to know that there was something interesting happening on the inside as well.
That was a fun project because when you're working with a booklet like that, you can be a little more editorial. It wasn't just like a sales piece. You can tell a whole story, you know, just enough per page to keep the person turning the page. That was a really fun piece.
Yeah.
How did it turn out for the client? Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say what I love about it too is it's so dimensional and interactive. It gets somebody to like actually physically move it around.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it would have been the same without the die cut because that little like show through the peek into what's inside is the thing that really got you excited to open it.
I agree. It definitely would not have, you wouldn't have known, you wouldn't have had the incentive to open it if you didn't have that
peekaboo window to show you what was inside. But the other thing I'll mention is that we did a little bit more of a intricate die cut. So it was like a wave. So the whole piece had like, the theme was currents. So there was a lot of water imagery and movement. And so then the die cut itself tied into that and was this squiggle line, if you will, which on its own, full disclosure, wouldn't mail well. So it was mailed in a like poly envelope, a clear envelope. So you could see it and see everything in there and maintain the integrity of the paper and the design. Cause die cuts do get tricky to mail and maintain their integrity. So that's kind of like our little secret hack is if we want to introduce a die cut, send it in a poly mailer, poly bag, clear bag.
How did that turn out for the client? How did they feel about that piece?
It was great. They had really, really good feedback. They used it as a sample piece and discussion for their sales team, kept it. So they printed extras. So it went as a marketing channel mail message to that 10,000 list. And then they printed extras and they used those extras as marketing collateral to talk to the benefits of their product. So it was a shelf life that lasted for this mailer is probably like a year and a half, 2 years old at this point, maybe a little bit older. And they still have it out. They still use it in an ongoing way because the content was so, impactful and evergreen. So it was a great campaign.
Problem solved. Aurelia, thank you so much for joining us today. This was really fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Good to see you. See you next time.
This year marks our 30th year in business. In this season of Sidetracked, we're gathering Trekkies at the bar to reminisce about our favorite moments from the last 3 decades.
One time, traveling with Trek, I was with this guy.
Oh, geez.
Uh-oh. Where'd you guys go?
This is our whirlwind tour.
Yes, this is when we were in New Jersey. And you'll remember this. We went to a restaurant after shooting all day for like 8 to 10 hours, something like that. And we went to a restaurant. Mm-hmm. It was a nice little Italian place. It had like pizza and pasta and all kinds of stuff. It was completely empty. It was like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a small family place. There was this very, very young waitress who couldn't have been more than 17.
She was in the family of the ownership.
Yeah, she was part of the family. It was a family-owned kind of joint. And I can't remember what you and Laura ordered, but you guys ordered something fairly reasonable. And then I had been on this kick of like, oh, what's good here? What's like the thing to get? What do you order?
Yeah.
And I asked this like 16-year-old, what would you get? What's your thing? And she said the buffalo chicken pizza. And I was like, if she's recommending a buffalo chicken pizza, it has to be the best or the worst buffalo chicken pizza in existence. Because who recommends that to some random stranger?
Was it the best or the worst?
Oh my God, it was so bad.
Oh no.
It was so bad. It was, I think I had like 2 slices of it and just pushed it aside, talked for the rest of the dinner, tried to make myself entertaining for the client. And, we just left it there.
And Laura and I, we had great, I think it was different types of pizzas and we're like, this is great stuff.
We're jealous.
Someone had like a pasta. I think Laura had a pasta.
Yeah, she had a pasta. It was very good.
Fantastic.
Do you remember them putting us in a room where they did not heat it?
Yes.
You almost could see your breath.
It was really cold.
Like, okay, you guys just opening it up. But it was like dinner time. Yeah, it was something else.
This is also like within the first 3 months of me being at Trek.
Yeah, we asked you to go on that Whirlwind video tour and you were brand new. Yes. And yeah. How many cities did you all go to? I mean, you went to all of them because there were several stops. And yes. You went to two?
I went to two locations in New Jersey, South Plainfield and
the same trip we drove to the two.
Yeah. But no, Mike did the whole tour.
That was fun. And, I do have to say that was fun.
Yeah, it seemed really fun. It's cool when clients let us do stuff like that. Honestly.
That's how I learned how to fly a drone. It was the first time flying a drone.
Really?
Yes. I remember we got the drone because we needed to get drone work of the facilities. Uh-huh. And then also we're like, oh, you know, I'm kind of confident in it, which shouldn't have been. And I'm flying it over this piece of equipment indoors. And there's all these like downward, you know, fans coming from the ceiling, and I'm over this piece of equipment that if my drone falls inside of it, they have to like literally stop all of the machines in the entire like facility and like have to like repair it. I'm like, I'm just sweating buckets, just so fearful of like, oh gosh, am I going to do this or mess it up? Got a great shot. It was fantastic. And we used it in a lot of their film, and it was, but that was a fun one.
Yeah, as someone who was editing, it was worth it to get because it was a cool shot.
It was a cool shot to get.
Drones are just fun.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Well, cheers to 30 years.
Cheers to 30 years.
Thanks for joining us. You can learn more about Trek at trek.com.
If you liked this episode of Sidetracked, please rate and review it, share it with a friend, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube.
See you next time.
See ya.